Hello everyone, and welcome again to the Associate and Affiliate Cricket Podcast, and a warm welcome to my co-host, Andrew Nixon.
Hi Russ, hi everybody.
We've got a few things to talk about on the show today. The World Cup qualifiers have concluded, and Scotland were the worthy winners. And while that's been going on, the ICC has been undergoing substantial reforms, which we'll talk about the implications for the associate members, and there's a little bit of news as well. Well, start with the qualifiers, Andrew. Interesting few weeks in New Zealand. Let's look at the bottom few teams first. The three teams went to the tournament and only really beat each other, which was Nepal, Canada, and Uganda. But a disappointing tournament, obviously, for them.
Especially Nepal. Nepal had very high hopes going into the tournament after a successful World 2020 qualifier, and didn't win a game until, you know, the last completely unimportant ninth place playoff against Uganda. A very disappointing performance for Nepal. Their fans at home certainly won't be happy. They were quite hopeful of, if not getting to the World Cup, and certainly getting one day international status. And I was surprised by just how badly they did do. I think we both said that they might not get to the World Cup, but ODI status was certainly a possibility. And, yeah, to finish in ninth place is certainly not what we were expecting. It's more of the old-fashioned Nepal that loses the important games.
Yeah, I think they certainly seem to miss Paris Kotkov, and he was possibly injured for some, as well as Kukeral, because really their batting didn't fire at all. And this was a tournament that if you didn't score runs, the team really struggled. Uganda is a good example of that as well.
So Nepal's bowling lineup lacked a little as well. Obviously, they're quite spin-heavy. They did bring in a couple of pace bowlers into the squad for this tournament, but they didn't really succeed. And, yeah, a very, all in all, extremely poor performance by Nepal.
And Canada, we thought they'd struggle, but it was possibly a bit of a surprise that they only managed to beat Nepal in the opening group stage.
Yeah, I actually thought Nepal would beat Canada. I was sort of predicting Canada might finish bottom of that group. So they actually finished fourth in the group, which is better than I expected. But yeah, Canada very poor. They ended the group stage with a heavy defeat to Scotland, and, you know, even before then they were sort of pretty poor. They lost to the UAE by 80 runs, lost to Hong Kong by 9 wickets, lost to Scotland by 170 runs. So when they lost bad. It was just that game against Nepal where they won by 12 runs. So not a very successful tournament, and they'll be certainly very disappointed. And a big loss of funding for them, obviously no longer at the top of the high performance program, and it'll be interesting to see where Canada goes from here. They need to, I think, look at themselves and realise that what they've been doing the last few years hasn't worked, and they need to do something differently.
One notable thing I think we picked up on it before the tournament, the Group A certainly was the stronger of the two groups. The three teams there finished top of the Super 6 table as well. There's only one match that those three teams lost in the second round, which makes the fourth team not to make the Super 6 particularly surprising, because the Netherlands were in Group B and they still managed to not get out of their group.
Hey, yeah, that was very surprising. Obviously, a very narrow run rate against Kenya. Its net run rate was separated by 0.03, so a very narrow margin. But, you know, the last group stage match against Kenya, you know, Kenya needed to chase 266 in about 37 overs and did it in 35.4. Really, you shouldn't be letting a team score at that sort of rate in this sort of tournament when you've got that crucial match like that. And it seems a shame that they have now lost their one-day international status on the strength of essentially just that one match. Had the Netherlands won that game, they'd have gone into the Super 6 stage with 2 points, a chance of getting through to the, getting, if not to the World Cup, then certainly getting ODI status. And it is a shame for so much to be riding on just that one match, but that's what cricket seems to be like at associate level.
Yeah, the other loss they had, of course, was to Namibia. And again, just a couple of bad performances is all it takes at this level, isn't it, to miss out on that kind of funding and that spot.
Yeah, and you know, to some extent, in terms of ranking and whatnot, a couple of bad forms, you just see you start to sort of drop down a bit. But the funding element, it seems a shame that it has an impact on that as well. I don't know whether certainly on the ICC's scorecard system for development funding, they have some parachute payments where if you drop down, you get a little bit extra the next year. Whether that's going to be the case for the Netherlands dropping down from the high performance program to the lower levels of high performance, where I think they get half the amount of money. I don't know. But it seems a shame for them to lose so much funding from just those two bad performances.
Moving on to the Super Six stage, the three teams from Group B finished at the bottom three. PNG started really well, but they seemed to tire as the tournament went on. They particularly the last couple of games where they conceded at quite very high totals to Scotland and UAE.
They had the fortune of having a relatively easy first round group, and then going into the Super Six, they were sort of on top of the table. They were the only team to carry forward 4 points, but unfortunately couldn't add to those 4 points. Lost all three of their Super Six games, still managed to retain one day international status, which is a very good first team from the East Asia Pacific region to get that, and they'll also play in the Intercontinental Cup, which is should be very good for them. And Papua New Guinea perhaps could have struggled a bit because they haven't played any international 50-over cricket for 3 years, of course. Played a little bit in the South Australia Premier League and a few other matches here and there, but they've been away from one-day cricket on the international stage for a number of years, whereas Hong Kong, who were the other team to have stayed in from Division 2 in 2011, have been playing 50-over cricket in the ACC tournaments. And yeah, Papua New Guinea had some good performance. Lega Siaka, scoring 2 centuries, played superbly throughout the tournament, and finished with 308 runs in his 7 games. And there's some promising signs of the future for Papua New Guinea. Weren't reliant on Geraint Jones, which I think a lot of people assumed it would be. Geraint Jones barely did anything in the tournament. He only had 1 innings over 50. So disappointing for Papua New Guinea. They didn't do well in the Super Six and didn't get to the World Cup, but very good for them that they've got one international status.
Yeah, the team they picked to win his national status was Kenya. Now, they had a terrible start to the tournament, but finished quite well. A little bit sad to see them, after such a long period of being at the top associates, find themselves in the outer. They fought very valiantly in the end, especially with that victory over the Netherlands to actually make the Super Six.
Yeah, a superb performance by them against the Netherlands. But again, got into the Super Six. They did manage to win one game in that Super Six, but that wasn't to be enough. And it really is a shame. We've had one day international status since 1996. It's been a long time. Some teams that one team that now has one day international status wasn't even an ICC member when Kenya started having one day international status. So that perhaps shows just how far they've dropped down, and very, very disappointed for Kenya. And I think, like Canada, they need to take a long, hard look at themselves and look at doing things in a different way from now on.
Hong Kong, mentioned a second ago, they had a really surprisingly good tournament. Were you surprised at the level, particularly Irfan Ahmed, who I think my impression of him was a little bit of a slogger at the top of the order. He scoring, I think, a ton and 2 very quick 50s, including on the last day.
Yeah, Irfan Ahmed had a great tournament, and Hong Kong did as well. I expected Hong Kong to maybe get to the Super Six, but I was under the impression they were perhaps more of a team better suited to 2020. Obviously, they qualified for the World 2020. And I didn't think they'd do as well in the 50-over format, but they won that game against Papua New Guinea and also beat Namibia quite convincingly. So, yeah, very excited for Hong Kong. They've got a young side. So I think hopefully they can go on for and do better things. And I think they need to get some matches against full members for now they've got one-day international status. Hong Kong have previously played a handful of one-day internationals as part of the Asia Cup in the past. There is a tournament scheduled for, I think, June in Malaysia, which will have the top six Asian associates, and hopefully the matches between Afghanistan, Hong Kong, UAE will be one-day internationals, so I'll get Hong Kong there off the mark for one internationals, and hopefully they'll be able to keep this top six ranking and also do well in the Intercontinental Cup. They have a slight problem that none of their grounds at home are suitable for one-day international cricket. They're all a little bit too small. Obviously, space is at very much a premium in Hong Kong, and they could find themselves, like Afghanistan, having to play all their matches away from home.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting issue for them. Their immediate option is in China, in fact. I think that would be the closest ground in Guangzhou, which is not too far away from Hong Kong. They have been trying to push the government to help fund some improvements, and potentially ground, or even obviously the Hong Kong Sixers has been looking for funding. So hopefully getting one-day status and being in the World 2020 can help them leverage that into actually getting a bit of funding from the government and the ground and something that they can build on for the future.
Yeah, and I think the high-performance program funding they're now going to get, I think they need to invest that in developing some cricket amongst the Chinese population in Hong Kong. Because I think one of the reasons why the government wasn't too keen on funding the Hong Kong Sixers, it was seen as very much an expat event. And if cricket needs to stop being seen as an expat sport in Hong Kong, and if they can get more Chinese players involved, then the government might sort of come on board a little more and perhaps be more willing to fund them.
Finally, the UAE and Scotland have qualified for the World Cup, but quite clearly, I think, the best two teams through the tournament, and in UAE's case, one of the strongest performers for the last couple of years. It really fully deserved for them.
Yeah, UAE have come on a long way since the 2009 qualifier. And they're a very talented side now. And, Karim Khan just seems to get better with age. He finishes the tournament's leading run scorer. 547 runs at an average of 78 is just superb. Scored a century and 450s. Rarely really failed with the bat. And, I think he's 41 now. I think if he manages to score a one-day international century, he'll be the oldest player to do so. He'll be one of the oldest players to play in the World Cup, certainly. And, Karim Khan's been playing for the UAE for a long time now, and he deserves this opportunity to play at the World Cup. And, yeah, the UAE, definitely one of the best sides in the tournament. Scotland had a little hiccup at the beginning, but UAE didn't really have any major hiccup. They did lose one game, but, very successful tournament for the UAE.
Yeah, their seam attack surprised me a little bit. It looked a lot stronger than we were perhaps expecting, given that they normally don't actually play any seam bowlers at all.
We've seen matches where the UAE have bowled five overs of pace and then bowled 45 overs of spin. So, yeah, to have a decent pace attack was very much a surprise to me. And they'll need a good pace attack if they're to succeed in any way in the World Cup, of course. And, good luck to them. And first World Cup since 1996, I think. People will remember their match against South Africa, perhaps for the wrong reasons, with their captain deciding to bat against Alan Donald without a helmet, which probably wasn't the best move anybody has ever made in international cricket, but hopefully nobody will do that again this time.
Scotland, worthy winners. It was very, very close, though. They, I think it the game against Kenya, they found themselves needing 30 of the last three overs with only 3 weeks in hand, and Taylor stood up and smashed a six, and they crawled them over that total, and they've gone on and won the final. But they certainly look, to me, very well prepared to actually play in the World Cup. Their attack is strong. Their batting is quite deep.
Yeah, some very talented players there with lots of experience in international cricket for the last few years, and some of them play a lot of county cricket as well. We've got some good players, and I think I'd back them to do better in the World Cup than the UAE would. You know, Callum McLeod had a superb tournament with two centuries. You know, it's amazing to think that just, well, less than 4 years ago, he was primarily a bowler who batted at around 9 or 10 in the order, was suspended for having a suspect action, worked on his batting, and now he's one of the leading batsmen in associate cricket.
And final thoughts on the tournament, Andrew?
A successful tournament. To some extent, it's a shame it had to be played in New Zealand. I'd rather that these tournaments were played in one of the participating countries. But obviously, I can see the point where it gets them used to the conditions that they would be played in the World Cup. The last thing you don't want to play this in Asia, have all the Asian teams qualify, and then they struggle when they get to the World Cup. You want to play in conditions as close as possible that you're going to get in the World Cup. But in general, I think it was an enjoyable tournament. I didn't get to see too much of it because of the time difference here. You know, a 13-hour time difference makes it a bit difficult to follow a tournament. But in general, I think you've got a situation now where you're seeing a new order emerging in associate cricket. Hong Kong and Papua New Guinea climbing up the rankings, and Kenya and Canada dropping down the rankings, and the Netherlands dropping down as well. And it's, you know, it's good to see these that the teams are changing at the top. And you know, at the last qualifier in 2009, you know, it was just a straight swap for Afghanistan for Bermuda. We didn't really see much of a change, but this time we've seen a lot of change. We've seen three teams get one day international status and three teams lose one day international status, so it feels like a big change to associate cricket at the top level.
Yeah, I certainly think also that the teams that have come through are teams that have spent a lot more of their resources on developing young players, and mm-hmm. It's good to see that rewarded. Their numbers, if you look at the census figures, are strong, and that's coming through, and that's why they're getting the players coming through and allowing them to do it.
Papua New Guinea is certainly a country that's done that. They've done a lot with the resources that they have. I think with this high performance funding they'll now get, they'll be able to do even more. And I can see Papua New Guinea climbing up the rankings even more, and perhaps even pushing Ireland and Afghanistan in the forthcoming years.
Having been in New Zealand, I'm not completely against the idea of having the tournaments there, because the grounds were immaculate. The conditions for spectators were good, but without actually being as if the ICC cared whether anyone turned up. There was absolutely no advertising or anything to indicate that the games were on, so only a handful of people there. But we certainly couldn't fault the facilities they were playing on, and that, for this level, that's important, I think, as well, to make sure that the players have that opportunity to play on the best grounds. Certainly a nice environment to watch the cricket.
Yeah, were there many people turning up to the games that you saw?
I would say less than 40 on most days, and at all the grounds I was at, so in Christchurch and Lincoln. So it wasn't a huge crowd. As I said, there wasn't any advertising around Christchurch to indicate that it was there, but the people are there. There was a handful of people that had come from overseas to watch it, and they were certainly enjoyed the time they spent. Moving on then, Andrew, we should look at the ICC's position paper and the recent meeting they had to discuss that. Where
the,
to start?
The assume the position paper, as Gideon here calls it.
Yes, it's quite clear that the biggest losers out of this are actually probably going to be the associate teams, and more particularly the ICC, because the ICC is losing a lot of the powers it had to try and develop cricket. There was a number of comments in the paper that indicated the ICC was, I think at one point, funding tournaments that hadn't been approved, was the word that they, the term they used. And what did get voted through, a number of things have gone back for discussion, but all the full members were unanimous in stating that more money from associate cricket needs to go to full members, which is very disappointing.
Yeah, I think the main problem here, I've been saying this sort of in many ways for a couple of years now, but cricket doesn't realise